You care about helping others learn and grow, and now you can make an even greater difference. The Ohio State University's fully online master's in applied behavior analysis prepares you to help learners with disabilities thrive. You'll develop the skills to use evidence-based interventions that enhance learning outcomes and foster independence, all in a flexible format designed for working professionals. With growing demand for board-certified behavior analysts, this online program helps you prepare for what's next without pausing your life. If you're ready to expand your impact, Ohio State is ready to support your next step. Visit go.osu.edu/behavioranalysis.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
Harper sends a fly ball to deep center field. Championship. Into left center field, headed for the gap, and Venezuela has retaken the lead. Eugenio Suarez, just like that. Venezuela, the best in baseball.
Can you describe what this means for your country?
I mean, what can I say about this? It's amazing. God is good. All the glory is for Lord Jesus. He was with us the whole time. We're not just teammates. We are family. That's why we play with passion, with love. And as a Venezuelan, now we are the champions.
This is the ZabeCast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Now that right there was the good stuff. The World Baseball Classic delivers in the most epic way. And no, it does not make you a bad American or a bad patriot to say, I'm happy for Venezuela. Welcome to the ZabeCast. Happy Thursday, March 19, 2026. The start. Today, as you download and listen to this episode of the real tournament, the official bracket, the field of 64 now, after we have whittled down the first four games and the eight teams that played their way in. We had a couple of exciting games last night, marred by Dick Vitale and Charles Barkley thinking they were doing a podcast. They were there to call a game, not to do a podcast. And Barkley with one of the wildest, most ill-informed takes on what's going on right now in college basketball, college sports in general, and what can be done about it. We'll get to that in just a second. But first and foremost, good for Venezuela. That country and those people love the game of baseball. The sport is truly life. You know, in Ted Lasso, football is life. Well, baseball is life in Venezuela, as it is in the Dominican, as it is in many of these Latin American countries that have been unfortunate, poorly run, often communist dictatorship shitholes for a long time. So the only way out to a better life is by playing baseball. And you saw it on the faces. You saw it in the emotions. You heard it there from Suarez talking to Ken Rosenthal after the game. By the way, there is this, it's amazing the influence that Pardon My Take and Big Cat and PFT Commenter have, because Big Cat saying simply, Ken Rosenthal has to go, he's just a mean jerk, essentially, has now prompted a lot of people who work with Ken Rosenthal and know him to come out of nowhere to, you know, offer their defense of him on social media. This all stems, by the way, from the time in which one of the players, and I think it was in the All-Star game, got dumped with a bucket of Gatorade. It splashed on poor Ken's suit, and he jumped away from it and then looked down at the cameraman who had been knocked over in the scrum and had the most dismissive look possible. The most haughty, sucks for you, peon. You almost knocked me over. You almost got my suit wet. And he didn't even offer a hand up to the cameraman. He just walked off to the side. It was a terrible look, by the way. Terrible optics. I don't know Ken Rosenthal, but it didn't look good. That's a side rant. Let me get back to the main point. Venezuela is not our enemy. Even though somebody pointed out on Twitter, in fact, probably multiple people pointed out, it's wild to think that we flew in a bunch of helicopters in the middle of the night, plucked their country's president, and put him in jail in New York, and now we're just playing a casual, friendly baseball game with them like it's no big deal in America. It's because, of course, Venezuela is not our enemy. We would all benefit from a healthy, thriving Venezuela, which, by the way, it once was before the communists took over and ruined the place. It was considered the Paris of Central America. Go ahead, look it up. Don't cry for me, Argentina. Oh, that's a different country. But yes, so good for Venezuela, good for the players. Hell, Daniel Palencia, who was delivering gas at the end, you could kind of see a little glisten of a tear in the corner of his eye right before he made the final out. I mean, that's awesome. It just means a little bit more. I'm not saying that our guys didn't give a shit. Those that were there clearly did. They're getting raked over the coals for little stunts like wearing the Team USA hockey jerseys into the stadium, including Tarek Skubal, who did not pitch but still wanted to be on the bench with the fellas, I'm sure, to celebrate with champagne if they had won. He's waiting for his $400 million contract, which he doesn't want to jeopardize by a possible injury. I'm more sympathetic to Skubal than many of the boys I have on various text threads. But the whole thing optically did not look good. DeRosa got killed in this World Baseball Classic for a variety of reasons, including one of his final acts, which was to defer to the Padres to not put in Mason Miller in the ninth inning because he said, I wasn't going to put him in unless we were leading to close out the ninth. In a tie game, which it was, I didn't want to use him because that's what the Padres said. Apparently, the Venezuelan manager was asked by multiple teams, please don't use this guy, please don't use that guy. And I don't know how many of those requests they honored. Look, it is a wholly imperfect thing, but it has really become awesome. The whole spectacle of it, we now know, look, this thing is going to keep on growing. As someone pointed out, this began a decade ago from an MLB Network production only for diehard baseball fans, like true seamheads, to now a mainstream event with the World Series crew from Fox doing the games. Everyone who watched it this year loved it. It actually muscled out some March Madness talk, I believe, on, you know, in the general sports talk, radio, media, podcast ecosystem. So what a good start to the upcoming baseball season, which we hope will not be the last for 24 months as the nuclear winter approaches when it comes to baseball. I love exhibitions. Exhibitions helped build sports over the years. Barnstorming, special events, all-star games. These were things that were created 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years ago to say, hey, wouldn't this be cool if we tried this? And as money got bigger and bigger, and the athletes got more and more power, and the fear of injury started to grow and loom larger as a spectacle, so many of these ideas have been either kind of quashed or just not followed up on. So anytime a thing like this rises up and becomes good, you want to nurture it. You want to really lean into it. In addition to the fact that there are street bands with all kinds of drums and instruments and bongos and clarinets marching through the concourse of these games. It was loud. A loud, loud sellout at Marlins Park, where there's going to be 6,000 people on a hot summer thunderstormy day coming soon this summer. Pretty damn cool. Thing belongs in Miami. It's due to be played again in 2030. There are people who have ideas on ways to make it even better. Buster Olney had this morning on SportsCenter. He said, how about Monday Home Run Derby? He said, let's do it during the All-Star break, but make a week off. So this is All-Star Week / WBC Finals. The pool play would take place in spring training, but then the actual elimination games would take place this week. Monday, Home Run Derby. Tuesday, WBC Semis. Wednesday, All-Star Game. Thursday, WBC Final. Friday off, Saturday off, and then Sunday, Hall of Fame inductions. Monday, play ball! Back to baseball. Buster, you sir are a genius. I would sign up for that tomorrow, but I'm sure some people will bring up problems. Harper was a goat and not a good one in this event until he hit that two-run bomb. Judge was exposed yet again as being spectacularly unclutch as a superstar player who is incredible during the regular season. DeRosa got it from all angles, and I think mostly deservedly so, but let's also be real. They still almost won with DeRosa doing almost everything wrong, and they almost won with one of their best pitchers saying, yeah, nah, I'm just going to give you one little start, and that's it. And with Harper sucking, and with Judge sucking. So, you know, what are you going to do? The one thing I know is, can we please just stop trying to say something is bigger or better than the other thing? The shelf, the high shelf of sports where we put the things we love is big enough, is wide enough, has enough space to put multiple things up there. They don't have to go, well, this one's better than that one. The idiotic argument of, so is the World Baseball Classic bigger than the World Series?
Passion's been unbelievable, and we've heard a lot of players say bigger than a World Series. Bigger than a World Series, Derek Jeter?
I think the people that said it's bigger than a World Series never played in a World Series.
No, look, passion's been unbelievable, and we've heard a lot of players.
Yeah, so look, it's different, it's unique. In some ways, it means more. In other ways, it means less. And again, the teams were so jacked up given the fact that Italy's team, which almost beat Venezuela, they went deep into extra innings to finally fall, was comprised of almost exclusively Americans. The Puerto Rican team was decimated by insurance issues. The time off between games was not equal. And again, it was a best of one. So it's very much different than the actual World Series. But that was fun. Let's do it again in 4 years. To college basketball, Howard and UMBC in the first game, it was Howard by 3, 86-83. Close, exciting game as they prevail and advance into the proper bracket. And then the nightcap saw Texas dagger NC State 68-66 on a last-second shot by one Tremont Mark. Tremont Mark, who is a six-year senior, hit an off-balance, difficult fadeaway two over NC State's Trey Holloman. 1.1 seconds left, and it happened again. An assistant coach ran onto the court for Texas. It should have been a, bam, technical foul. But they again did not call it. So now we're going to have to start calling this because these stupid assistant coaches, I know you're getting excited, but Jesus, focus, okay? You wouldn't accept that lack of focus from a player, would you? Unfortunately, the game was marred by Dick Vitale and Charles Barkley, two very well-liked fixtures on the basketball landscape. Barkley in the pros, obviously, with around inside the NBA, and Vitale for years and years and years in college basketball. The two of them got to work together for the first time, and it was a love fest. And I'm not against them spending a moment or two or a minute or a little bit more at an appropriate stoppage of play to talk about how exciting it is to finally get to work together. Look, Vitale, you know, Vitale every day he wakes up is a blessing at this point at his age and what he's been through medically. So I get it. And I'm glad that Barkley has great respect and admiration for Vitale. But here's the thing, people. It's not a podcast you're doing like this where you get to hash out the issues of the day. Take a listen to this. And I'm going to stop it at one point in which Barkley uncorks the wildest, most ill-informed, couldn't-be-wronger take about the NIL and portal hellscape that is plaguing college basketball.
Don't mess with that. Why not go out and set, like Charles said, solve the problems with the NIL and also in terms of solve the problems with the transfer portal. Get some rules to get some stability.
And also, you have to understand something. Listen, as a guy who was a great, well, not a great college player, but a really good college player, the system is probably unfair to 1% of the players. But to change the whole rules for 1%, that's my biggest problem. You don't change rules of anything for the 1%. 1% of these guys are great, great players who make the school a lot of money. But
There's a whole game going on right now.
Let's don't change the rule for 1% of the players. 1% of these players are going to...
It was in the first half, by the way, but still.
1%. But we've changed the rules.
There's fouls, there's tactics, there's substitutions going on.
It's not fair to mid-majors. It's not fair.
Is your point over yet, Barkley?
Like I say, it's just not fair. And they're going to have to do something because...
Not fair.
You got all these middlemen who are scumbags. You got agents who are scumbags. Who don't care about loyalty to a school. That's what bothers me.
And in defense of the NCAA.
Okay, here we go. Brian Anderson is like, okay. Time for some adult conversation here.
That's what bothers me.
And in defense of the NCAA, they would love to...
Let's don't defend them. They're the reason the whole problem started.
Okay. And there it is right there. The ultimate midwits take. They're the problem. No credit. Don't defend them. They're the problem. We're here.
Love to do everything you guys are suggesting. They're going to need congressional help. There is
We don't need help from Congress.
No way.
Well, we don't need help from Congress. Yes, you actually do. You literally need Congress to pass antitrust exemptions in order for the NCAA to do exactly what BA said, which is, they'd love to do all this. The NCAA is not sitting around going, oh, this is great. We love this system. Unfettered free agency year after year after year. Players going all over the place. Budgets at schools being broken, busted through the seams. Oh, this is fantastic. We're so happy.
That the NCAA could do this on their own because every lawsuit that comes down, they lose.
Listen, hey guys, Brian, if you make the rules up at your house, you make the rules. I've heard that argument, but you make the rules up for your business.
I've heard that argument, and you don't understand it, or you're choosing to not understand it. This is not you make the rules up at your own house. The NCAA is not Ward Cleaver. They don't just get to say, my house, my rules.
Simple. And if you don't want to deal with the business, move on to go somewhere else.
Like, seriously, this is the most mid of midwit takes. Barely anchored in any reality.
Guys, we got a game going on.
Dial it in.
Let's this game for these kids.
Here's Pope for three. No good.
Oh, boy.
Texas is in a drought here. Nearly 8 minutes without scoring.
tell you one thing, NC State's been a little better on the glass.
So there you go. So now they're back to the game. Look, in a proper world, the NCAA would say publicly, the broadcast failed to meet the standards we expect for these games. The focus should be on the teams playing and the games as they're going on. And we have told our broadcast partner that, and they understand, and they will do better going forward. That's in a proper world. Of course, the NCAA is not going to say that because more midwits would then come out and kill them for saying that. We love Charles. Oh, don't be such a stick in the mud. And the NCAA does not want to anger their sugar daddy. It's television that's paying the bills. But this is another example of what I call the, somebody else coined the term, the inshittification of many aspects of society. It's not ruined per se. I'm still going to watch it like you are. It's just shittier. Things are not always a podcast, people. This is a podcast. If there's a game going on, call the game. And it'd be one thing if, despite this NIL portal mayhem that's been unleashed on the system, we're appreciated by every athlete who's benefited, but we're also finding out that there, babies about it too. Hunter Dickinson, who transferred from Michigan to Kansas in order to secure a large payday for his 7-foot skills, recently said on a podcast he got tired of playing basketball at Kansas because, quote, it got to a point where I didn't like playing. We'd come to the gym and it felt like a job. That's because it was. You were being paid over $1 million. Yes, it's a job. And there are jobs that'll pay way less in your life. Jobs that may pay nothing. Jobs you may have to dig into as an unpaid intern or a volunteer or just somebody hustling to break into a business. Yeah, it's a job. Job is a privilege. I say this with a guy who's currently out of a full-time paying W-2 job. Job is a privilege. Job is a blessing. There's millions of people who want a job. It feels like a job. Shut the fuck up. Are you kidding me? Give the money back then. Dickinson not only made close to $1 million, according to sources, there's no actual hard registry of how much this is, but he also grew a substantial NIL portfolio with brands like Skims, Ritz Crackers, Wendy's, Adidas, and more. Got to get that Ritz cracker money. Hope that wasn't too much work for you, Hunter. Aw, boo. Who? Somebody had a great tweet. This from @deferredwalkon regarding Barkley and Vitale. And this was not actual quotes, but this is a paraphrased exaggeration of what the broadcast sounded like. Barkley, the NCAA is a bunch of scumbags. I have a fat ass. Vitale, hey, I just spoke at a funeral last week. Every person I know is dying. Brian Anderson, Longhorns by 5. On the money front, kudos to the WNBA and their Players Association. They have a deal. Hallelujah, we've got women's basketball this summer. I know you're excited. After a prolonged and often rhetoric-infused labor battle, the two sides announced early Wednesday morning, just 51 days before the league's 30th season is set to start, that they have a new CBA. The salary cap will raise to $7 million per team. That's up from $1.5 in 2025, so a nearly 5X of the team salary cap. And the Supermax deal will start for individual players at $1.4 million, which is up from $249,000 last year. Average salary is going to be around $600,000, whereas the average had been $120,000, and the minimum salary has gone up from $66,000 to $300,000. These are tremendous leaps for a league that has not yet posted a profit on its own. Now, the only question is, knowing how oftentimes the fairer creatures that we love and live with think, how long, I ask you, will it be before the new deal is now no longer good enough? One more thing, then we'll get to Charch. Charch is threatened, by the way, to take over today's podcast. He says, I'm hosting. Don't prep our visit tomorrow. I've got it. And I go, oh boy, Hedy Lamarr 2, Electric Boogaloo, here we go. And he goes, no, it's not that. It's something else. I go, fine, we'll turn it over to you. But I had to get this stuff in right now. There's a term called unethical basketball that I don't know where it came from, probably a Reddit thread somewhere, or who knows who came up with it, but it's now gaining traction. It was uttered by Victor Wembanyama when talking about how many fouls Oklahoma City gets and the way that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the reigning MVP, the reigning finals MVP, is able to draw those fouls. And he called it unethical basketball. Actually, I think he called the Spurs brand ethical. This would sort of be like locally sourced, vegan grown, humanely harvested, whatever. Ethical basketball. Alex Caruso of the Thunder had the most unethical basketball ever last night. Caruso lost his shoe, and while trying to defend a layup by Orlando's Tristan Da Silva, picked up his shoe and used it to try to swat away the layup. Said Caruso, as soon as I had my shoe in my hand, it crept in my mind to use it, not in a malicious way, but like, well, let me try to make a play to stop the ball. He did get a technical foul for that. Now that is what you would call highly unethical basketball. Coming up, Charge with a takeover. You are listening to the Zabecast. All right, so look, I'm almost 57 years old now. In fact, almost 58, and I've been feeling more and more of it every day. You know what I'm talking about. Things that used to be easy just, well, aren't anymore. The energy is not quite like it used to be. Recovery takes longer. Nobody really talks about this stuff. We don't want to. But here's the reality. Most men start losing testosterone around age 30 at about 1% every year. Do the math. By the time you hit my age, well, it's added up. That's why I just started taking Mars Men. M-A-R-S Men. Here's what got me interested. Your body actually makes testosterone, but a lot of it gets locked up by this protein called SHBG. It's like having money in the bank, but your debit card doesn't work. Mars Men is designed to help free that locked testosterone so your body can actually use it. No synthetics, no needles, just 8 natural, clinically dosed ingredients like Tongkat Ali, Shilajit, vitamin D, and zinc. Now look, I'm still early in, but I'm feeling good right now, and I know this. It's made in the USA, third-party tested, and they offer a 90-day money-back guarantee. You can't go wrong with that. I'm the king of returns, right? Over 91% of users report higher energy levels, and the reviews are legit. You can check them out yourself. For a limited time, my listeners will get 50% off for life, plus free shipping and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off and 3 free gifts when you check out. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please, please, please support the show and the Zabecast by telling them I sent you.
You care about helping others learn and grow. And now you can make an even greater difference. The Ohio State University's fully online master's in applied behavior analysis prepares you to help learners with disabilities thrive. You'll develop the skills to use evidence-based interventions that enhance learning outcomes and foster independence, all in a flexible format designed for working professionals. With growing demand for board-certified behavior analysts, this online program helps you prepare for what's next, without pausing your life. If you're ready to expand your impact, Ohio State is ready to support your next step. Visit go.osu.edu/behavioranalysis.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Prenuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Prenuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. It just feels right to hear this once a week. And it's great to connect with my boy. Paul Charchian joins me, and I'll see him in a week at Zabe Vegas. Super excited for that. Today, though, Charge, you are moving freely about the West, I understand. Driving to Arizona?
Yep, got friends in Phoenix where it's going to be 105 degrees today.
Woo!
That's insane. It's here we are in early to mid-March, and it's 105 in Phoenix. Unbelievable.
So, right before we started, Charge said, "Look, I got to tell you, I'm battling a bit of a cold, but that's okay because you're going to talk most of the time." And I go, whoa. You told me explicitly, don't prep today's appearance.
That's right.
I've got it. Now I've got to do the heavy lifting? What the hell is this bait and switch?
You aren't going to do no heavy lifting. You're going to do the talking.
That's heavy lifting!
This episode of the ZabeCast is 10 tough questions for Steve Zabin.
Okay, so no mental heavy lifting, but I am going to be up on the dais, up on the pedestal,
yes,
up on the chair.
You are in the microscope.
I'm in the hot seat.
In the petri dish.
Okay.
The slide under the microscope.
Oh, my God. What inspired this, may I ask?
This is something I've had in the back of my mind for a long time, where I'm going to ask you questions that I think listeners would want to hear from you. Everybody who, every single listener loves, or at least likes, or at least tolerates Steve Zabin.
Yes.
These are all Steve-centric questions, 10 of them, that you can answer in the fashion of your choosing.
10 unthinkable questions.
Thinkable.
So
that's right.
Are you being fed these questions by people that reach out to you going, hey, next time on,
this is just
ask Zabe about this?
No. Okay. Nobody knew this was coming. Right. People do not email me saying, I really wish you would ask Zabe about these things. They're welcome to. So this is entirely of my crafting.
Fair enough. Okay, good. I'm ready.
With question, do we go 10 to 1 on this or 1 to 10 on this? Let's go 10 to 1.
10 to 1.
Got them numbered. Yes.
Are they sequenced in order of priority? Meaning, is question number 1, do you believe in a holy and existential God? That would probably be at the highest level. Number 10 would be like, do you prefer the designated hitter or not?
There is a reason for the order of the questions, but it's not quite that, although I think number one is the one I'm most excited about. Question number 10 for Steve Zabin. You can go back in time and attend any concert ever performed in any location, regardless of the cost or the logistics or the time machine you need to do this. Give me the artist you're going to see, the city in which you're going to see them, and if known, the venue in which you want to see that artist.
I would say probably Mozart's first public concert when he was just a child prodigy. And I would make sure to save the ticket and frame it. And then I would sell it to Darren Revelle years later saying, hey, Darren, I time traveled. I know you love concert tickets. I've got Mozart's first grade school recital. Ticket right here, baby. No.
It was a ticketed event in first grade.
So here's the thing about concerts and me. You are catching a guy who is late to life on going to concerts and enjoying concerts. And so therefore, I don't have a great answer for you on this because there are not bands that I grew up going, I got to go see them in person. So I don't really have that same mindset that you do. I would probably say in terms of concerts, I mean, Live Aid, just because it was made into a movie, the Freddie Mercury Live Aid performance with Queen is one of the ones where you're like, if I could have been in the front row for that, that would have been pretty effing amazing.
So, yeah, and you know, we're going to presume that you can be in whatever row you want to for this. So you could be first.
Why wouldn't you want to be in the first row?
One of the biggest events in the history of rock music. That is a very valid answer.
Okay, so question. Can I real quick tell you some of my favorite concerts I have been to?
Yeah, please. Okay. Absolutely.
One of my favorites was, believe it or not, Taylor Swift in a 5,000 seat temporary venue at the Houston Super Bowl 2017, I want to say. Brent Boydston, my friend and listener from Kansas City, had tickets. So these were very exclusive tickets. This is right before she went into the studio to record, I forget which album it was, and she was doing one last concert before then. She made a new album and then went on tour with that, right? And it was 5,000 people. That's it. And so it was very intimate. And it was great. It was the Taylor Swift that I like better, just the poppy, sugary, banger Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
She opened with New Romantics, which was awesome. She ended with Shake It Off, which was awesome. And by the time the concert was over, we were up on like sort of a balcony near where the DJ turntables were. And it was a great seat. We were very close to the stage. But I worked my way down to the mosh pit with all the kids. And I was able to just be kind of up close in that throng. It was very cool. Also, I went to see a Sinatra impersonator at the Palazzo in Vegas. And you might say, "What Sinatra impersonator? Give me a break." This guy was the preeminent Sinatra impersonator in the world. And he had assembled an orchestra of about 40 strong musicians. Because remember, you know, the Sinatra orchestra had many different parts and instruments. He had assembled an orchestra that had probably like, I think they said 29 of the 40 instruments were original members at one point of what? Sinatra's. Yeah, they were old dudes.
Oh, they're all in their 70s and 80s?
Yeah. And so he played this set that was amazing. It was a smashed up, like he had several songs that included four or five different Sinatra bangers, because the only way to get all of them in was to do like a amalgamation. So he'd do like five songs in one, basically, on a couple of the songs. And I got to talk to him afterwards as well. That was super cool. Also, in Vegas, they used to have something at Caesar's Palace called the Gossy Room or the Gossy Lounge. This artist, David Goss, G-O-S-S. Lounge singer extraordinaire. It was in Cleopatra's Barge. Super intimate venue. Yeah. And he was a great singer, great showman. He had the super hot doo-wop girls, three or four of them, singing backups. He had some, you know, horns, some saxes, the rhythm section, guitar, bass, drums. You're sitting right there. And then, and they played a combination of some traditional jazz songs with a lot of pop or rock songs that had been retrofit, including some Eagles songs he played that were killer. And you're right there. You're right immersed in it. And then after the concert, what did you get to do? You got to go have a drink with them, with Goss and his band at the bar, right there at Cleopatra's Barge. I think they got rid of it. I think they just killed it. They're like, it's too much work. So, okay, enough of that.
You know, for any listeners right now who are rolling their eyes at the idea of a cover band being one of your favorite experiences, A, F you, because people get to have whatever experience they want. But also, here's an example. Journey has been touring for the last 15 years without Steve Perry as their lead singer. They found on YouTube this kid, named Arnel Pineda in the Philippines, who was a dead ringer vocally for Steve Perry. And they've been touring with him, and he's awesome. And he's probably much better than Steve Perry would be at now pushing 80 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, you know, you get to have,
well, these are musical experiences. And you might say, well, the thing about the Sinatra impersonator, he not only looked like, you know, the chairman of the board, but he sang great as well. And because of how close and intimate it was kind of cool. You know, you can see an actual original band with their full members, even in their quote unquote prime, and be disappointed by the musical experience based on the venue, the acoustics, any number of reasons, right? So, but again, I got a very incomplete music and concert history. One of the best concerts recently I went to was two summers ago at AmFam in Milwaukee, where I got to see Kenny Chesney, who let the Zac Brown Band open for him, and Zac Brown Band blew the lid off the place, arguably outperformed Chesney. And I asked our country music expert, Scott Dolphin, I go, man, you would think he wouldn't want somebody that good opening for him. And he goes, nah, Chesney don't give a fuck. He just wants the best musicians willing to play with him on tour. So he has no problem with that. But yeah, Zac Brown Band was off the charts. Now that's a stadium. That was the least intimate of venues, but it was absolutely amazing. And then I saw Earth, Wind, and Fire up close at Summerfest, and they're old. I'll just put it that way.
At this stage, they're old.
Verdeen White looks like some sort of animatronic zombie with his bass. But you know what? They were giving it the full go. So I respect him for that.
Hopefully, in almost exactly to the day, 1 month's time, you will be joining me in Washington to see Mad Scientist Rockers, Holy Fuck, with me in mid-April.
Well, let me get that into town on the schedule. Let me get that on the schedule.
16th of April, put it on the schedule. I'm hoping you'll join me. The good thing about this band is there's no singer. And that's where that can turn a band you don't like into a band you hate, is a horrible singer screeching into a microphone. But I think you will enjoy it. Yeah. And I encourage you to come. Let's move to tough question.
Hold on. Gossie's Lounge ended at Caesars in 2016. So there you go. The Gossie Room at Caesars Palace.
I remember
Palace.
Cleopatra's Barge very well.
Yep.
Okay. Tough question number 9 in reverse order. Your best athletic moment as a kid. So I went high school or younger, and this could be neighborhood ball. This could be a pickup game. This could be whatever. What was your best moment of your childhood from an athletic standpoint?
Pitching a complete game two-hit shutout against Bergman's Laundry while on Mort's Bootery, McLean Little League, Major Leagues, under manager Frank Catula, who taught me how to throw a curveball, and I had a really good Uncle Charlie. And it was on a day after which I had spent most of the afternoon, this was a night game, I spent most of the afternoon swimming at Tuckahoe Swim Club, which is where my parents belonged, just down the street. And when I told Coach Catula that I had been at the pool that day, he got angry going, I told you, don't wear yourself out. Yeah. We had a big game tonight. And still I went out and pitched the game of my life. Not that I remember it as if it was yesterday, but I kind of do.
We do remember those things, don't
yes.
we?
Yes.
They're important.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tough question 8 for Steve Zabin. If your efforts to be a radio host hadn't worked out, what is the career that you would be doing today, March 2026?
Well, I briefly got out of radio a couple of times, or at least once. For sure, this was in Chicago when I was frustrated with some of the decision-making at the then One-on-One Sports Radio Network. And because I was young and not married and had much more ability to say, fuck you, I'm doing this instead, I left. And I went to go work for a golf course
management company called Lynx Corp. And they owned a small portfolio of courses. And I helped design brochures for these golf courses around the country that they owned and managed. These companies would buy the courses so that they could get fertilizer in bulk, help them optimize their greens fees and management style to make money. And they, of course, needed marketing. So I would write up these unbelievably exaggerated glowing praise brochures about Rickenbacker Golf Course in Ohio. Rickenbacker, a delight for ages, for all ages. A stimulating challenge for the lower player, yet accessible to even novice golfers. Come play Rickenbacker. And some other courses. So fantastic. I did that for about a year, but because I was just down the road, and then management changed at One-on-One Sports, and the guy who became the program director, Mark Jenskow, was a believer in me. He came over and said, look, we want to bring you back. We're going to let you start hosting the show, do this, do that. And I said, okay, let's go ahead and do this. So that was my brief little detour from being on air.
I could see you doing that for a living, and especially I could see you out. You're a camera nut. You love taking photos. I could see you building brochures, taking photos, going to the courses. I could see that. That worked. That makes sense. I could see you doing it today.
You get a picture
related,
of a golf,
although not intentionally related.
Yeah.
Question number 7: what was the best round of golf you ever played?
Best, not lowest scoring.
Right, different.
Best is different, yeah. In terms of magical, all elements included, with both who I played with, the quality of the course, the magnificence of the weather, the vibe of the moment. That's a tough one because I have been utterly blessed, Charge, with so many great golf experiences, either by my own grit and determination and desire to go, you know what, I'm going to do this. Or saving money up to go play over in Scotland multiple places and multiple times. Or just by the dumb luck of being in radio and getting these promotions dropped in my lap. Once played 18 holes with major championship winner, Ryder Cup winner, Jim Furyk. Jim Furyk.
No way. The crazy swing of Jim Furyk.
Yeah, exactly. So, Furyk was in town promoting Johnny Walker Black. That was his endorsement. Oh, he had a Johnny Walker endorsement. Bad. And it was a promotion with the radio station. I got to play 18 holes with him at TPC Avenel, which is the PGA Tour course that I once worked at, by the way, as an outside ops slappy. I was the range attendant there. All and right. Not only did I get to play with Furyk, but as a 10 handicap playing from the white tees, he playing as a scratch from the back tees, I beat him in a match.
Wow. Wow.
And unbeknownst to me, after the match, he handed me the scorecard from his cart, and it was neatly kept with all the scores correct with a final of, me winning, I think it was like 4-3 or 3-2. It was not particularly close, but again, I'm a 10. And he's playing from a million miles behind me. And I shot pretty well. He did not. And he handed me the scorecard and said, thanks a lot. That was great. That's a pretty fucking good round right
there. I hope you kept the scorecard.
Nah, it's lost somewhere. I should have framed it with a photo. I know. It's somewhere.
Most people would have. You are not a sentimentalist.
No, I am. I don't know where it is. And my fucking camera just went out again. Motherfuckers, to God help me. Can you hear me, Church?
I can hear you.
Then we're just going to go with the hearing. All right, next.
Okay. Number 6. Have you ever cried over a sports moment?
Oh, yeah. Multiple times. And usually, I can't think per se when it was, but like it's usually when I'm crying for somebody because I'm happy that they finally won. A lot of, there's been golfers over the years that I've kind of welled up, usually at the Masters when they finally win, including some guys who turn out to be douchebags. And I'm like, why do I even give a shit about this guy? I think when Sergio won the Masters, I was kind of choked up. Wow. And he's a little dipshit, so fuck him. But yeah, I have had moments where I've cried. I have not cried like my team has won. This is so wonderful. More so just a, wow, this is really cool. I didn't even cry when I was in attendance for the Capitals winning the Stanley Cup in Vegas against the Golden Knights, which was an all-time lifetime sports highlight moment. I was excited. I was screaming and yelling. I do have some assets from that night, but I didn't cry. I cried every year the Capitals got bounced from the playoffs in the first round as a one or a two seed. Hence the ongoing meme of me in pajamas with a Capitals pajamas on and an empty box that said Stanley Cup trophies and it was empty box. People photoshopped right. that in there. So, yeah.
Number five, tough questions for Zabe. In totality, among your various shows and various markets, including your national shows, what was your strongest show? Not individual show, but I meant in totality, like that, you know, that show. I had these co-hosts. I was on this radio station.
Ooh.
What was your strongest show out of all of them?
No question. It was First Team on Fox, me, Scott, Solly, and Galdi doing updates.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
four people,
some talent.
All very talented, very passionate sports fans, great chemistry, great friendship, kinship with each other, and it was glorious. But they don't pay for four-man booths anymore.
No.
It's just a joke. So that was the best it ever was. Or the sports reporters of me and Andy, a third contributor every day that rotated. So there was like a third mm-hmm. wheel that was different every week. And we had some yeah. good names that were our third wheel over the years. And they came from television, local TV, network TV, writers, columnists, Washington Post, whomever. And we also had Solly producing, and we had a phone screener. So we had two people inside the producer's booth. That's five bodies right there.
Wow.
Now, I will say there are some places that still staff up, like the Junkies here in D.C. They got four guys on air. Good for them. But at one point I counted, I was in there waiting to do the 10 to 2 show as a fill-in. They had three producers in the control room. They had the board up, they had the executive producer, and they had a social media person who was in charge of the YouTube feed and cutting up social video clips. And I actually took a picture. I sent it to Andy. I go, well, it's good that somebody's still staffing things up in radio.
Yeah. That's amazing. Seven people getting paid on one show is very, very uncommon.
It's not typical.
Maybe unheard of.
Yeah.
All right. Tough question four for Steve Zabin. Your desert island video game is what?
Oh, golly, 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 golly. Do I go old school? Do I say something like Galaga, Missile Command, Asteroids, one of the classics? How about Defender? I have Defender on the island, and when I can successfully get through 20 levels with still a few smart bombs and ships intact, then guess what? I will get off the island. That's my way of guess what? You're dying on that island. Williams designed that game to be too hard to be played.
It's true. It's true. That game was a huge, huge step up in complexity. It had six buttons. And I like the idea that you'd have the arcade cabinet on this desert island. You're not playing it on an Xbox. You've got the old style cabinet.
As far as consoles go, Charge, I don't know if I'd have a console game. I would want maybe Sega Genesis, NHL 94, but I'd want one of my college buddies. Oh, and by the way, I said on a previous Zabecast, I forget if it was with you or not, but I said erroneously that I got into a fight with my roommate, Scott Lawrence, over the ongoing series in NHL 94. Or it might have been Nintendo mm-hmm. hockey, fat guy, skinny guy, middle guy. and we are keeping a log, a handwritten log, on a spiral notebook of the games and streaks and scores and everything else. I was wrong.
Like Blades of Steel to me.
I was wrong. My boy Scotty said, he emailed me, he goes, no, that was Aaron Heifetz, our buddy, who also was our roommate. I never played video games. That was you and Heifetz who had that running series. And I was like, oh, that's right. Where I got sideways with Scott was over a parking space at the apartment because I parked in it late at night. And then he came in after me and couldn't find a spot and had to circle the block in Isla Vista for a long time. And he was super pissed. And anyway, we laughed about it now, but there you go.
Tough question number three. Zabe, Vegas is looming. For somebody who's never been to Las Vegas, his listeners right now, and some percentage of listeners have never been to Las Vegas, what is the one thing that person must do with their trip to Vegas?
I think you got to go downtown, see the old school Vegas, just to see what it's like compared to the Strip. I think you need to go find a lounge band somewhere, like a really grimy lounge band, not even a good one, not like Matt Goss at Gossy's, you know, the Gossy Room. I'm talking about just a real cheap ass, and just sit there and pound a couple drinks and soak in the atmosphere. I love the Chandelier bar that is at Cosmo, although it's getting super expensive and a bit overcooked these days. Vegas is a lot different than it once was. So when I say this is what you got to do when you go to Vegas, I mean, a lot of things that I've told you about that I used to like to do, they don't have anymore. You know, I mean, I used to play $1 blackjack with silver coins at Slots of Fun, which was a small, you remember Slots of Fun?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Small little casino right at the edge of the Strip on the north end, where the whole Strip started to go south from there with shittier and shittier casinos. And
that's right.
It was so cheap. And, you know, when I was a post-college student, a dollar a hand was like, okay, I'm comfortable with this.
It was a lot.
And I would sit there and I would clink the dirty metal, the dirty coins, the dirty silver coins, ching, 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 playing. And then, you know, oh, I got a double down hand, $2. Little did I know that those poor human dealers were sitting there with a loop going on in their head saying, kill me now. Please kill me now. Please kill me now. What am I doing? Someday I hope to work my way up to the Bellagio. Well, the Bellagio didn't exist. I hope to work my way up to the Mirage, which was the creme de la creme back in the day. So, yeah.
It was.
So,
and there is a – you do have to work your way up, is my understanding, as dealers. You have to do your time at the El Cortez.
Yeah.
And then – you know, work your way to the Lady Luck, work your way up, work your way north on downtown until you can get over to the Strip, work your way from the Excalibur up to, you know, some mid-tier place, like maybe,
right,
I don't know, the Flamingo, and then just try to, you know, keep stepping up until you've got a high-class clientele.
Two tips here just that I'm going to try to enforce for myself that I've learned over the last 10 years plus of Vegas. One, you can't just say, well, we'll figure it out once we're on the ground up there. We'll let the night unfold as we hope it will. It's what I call the hangover approach from the movie, where you think your night is going to be wild and unpredictable and crazy and fun and not deadly or getting arrested. And so you're going to let the mayhem unfold. No, you're not. That was a movie. Okay, your night is not going to be as fun as the boys in The Hangover. That's number one. Number two, the days of being able to just amble up and down the Strip and do what I call the paper route effect. I used to do paper routing of playing blackjack at casinos. I would stop into one casino. I'd put down $40 to play $5 blackjack. And whenever I got up $20 and $20 only, I'd cash out and I'd leave and I'd go to a new casino, like collecting money from a paper route. Not only can you not do that because they've tightened the rules on blackjack, that good luck getting up at any point while you're sitting down to play, and you're not going to find $5 tables anywhere, but the ability to amble from one casino to the next has been decimated by these elaborate staircases, walkovers, crossways, including a lot of escalators, as you know, Charge, that are out of business. that are out of out of working order, and you have to hoof it up there. There's nothing bigger of a buzzkill than having to up a huge flight of stairs to cross Las Vegas Boulevard to go somewhere else. So get a plan, which I'm going to have, execute the plan, and don't count on going to multiple places in a single night, because it's just going to take too much time. Taxi lines to get in, taxi waiting time to get on the strip, traffic, find a place, go there, have fun.
That's especially true on the strip. You know, downtown, you can do that.
You can paper route downtown because, it's tighter.
Yep. It's tighter, right? It's just the size is just so big on the strip. And classically, famously, for, 25 years, Caesars had the moving walkways that brought you in from the sidewalk.
Yes.
But no moving walkway to get you out of Caesars.
That's right. If you're leaving with any money left that we haven't siphoned out of your wallet, guess what? You can do it on your own power. Fuck you.
You can hoof it yourself.
That's right.
In fact, tough question number two.
I'm surprised Caesars didn't have walkways that dragged you back in, that you would have to walk twice as fast just to get out. Help!
That's right. Like we all did as kids, because we all did it, where you would run up the escalator that was coming down.
Yes.
We all did it as kids. Yes. It would be just like that.
That's right.
Where you've got to outrun the escalator that's coming at you.
They already designed casinos so that they are essentially like rat mazes, where there is no simple route. There's no simple right angles. There is, kiosks. There's clusters of machines all over the place. Mirrors, lights. It's designed to not allow for easy egress or exit. They want to trap you in there.
The penultimate question, number two for Zabe. There have been many amazing athletes that have come out of the Washington, D.C. Beltway area.
Oh boy.
Who is the single most accomplished Washington athlete?
Now I'm going to have to Google this just to make sure I'm not forgetting any. Kevin Durant in the NBA from Maryland, one of the most well-known. He's from technically PG County. Katie Ledecky is a incredibly decorated swimmer from Bethesda, Maryland. Dominique Dawes was a great gymnast from Silver Spring.
Yep.
Sugar Ray Leonard.
I was thinking you get to answer it however you would like, because I didn't phrase it specifically. In my mind, I was thinking of people whose professional career was primarily in the Washington
who's
area.
So in other words, who's the king of DC sports athletes?
Yeah, Elgin Baylor one example, right?
Yeah, the legends of DC. Obviously, any player who was on a championship team here in DC over the years, who also became a fixture in the community. Ovi's making that case if he ends up retiring after this year as a one-team Hall of Famer and the all-time leading goal scorer in NHL history, and a Stanley Cup champion, and a guy who came here from Russia and immediately immersed himself and wanted to be here and wasn't like, I just want to go somewhere else to a bigger market, a more hockey-oriented place. Just a great dude. So he's going to be up there, obviously, a Redskin would. We once did something called Redskin Island on the local show with me and Andy, where we would vote people off. And I believe that Daryl Green one or Redskin survivor.
The last man. He was last man standing.
He was like Redskin survivor, Daryl Green. Yeah. Yeah. So there's not one single one. Who would be the one from Minnesota? That's the king athlete of Minnesota. Undisputed.
Well, because we have so few championships, you would go to probably one of the championship teams. And you'd probably go Kirby Puckett because he delivered two.
Even though he was disgraced in the end?
He was disgraced in the end. He was disgraced in the end because, I guess we don't need to say why. But, yes, I think it would be him.
Sexual assault situation, player. I believe.
Yeah. Not the best player in Minnesota history. I thought you might go Walter Johnson. Big train.
Well, yes.
I thought you might go Wes Unseld.
Well, those are legends. No question about it. But you're dipping back in a almost prehistoric time for players. And while Wes Unseld, who was then for a long time the GM of the Wizards or Bullets, he was a terrible GM. Like, he was part of the reason the team was mired in mediocrity, if not worse, for a long time. Because he was a beloved ex-player by, Abe Pollin, the owner of the team. And for years, we're like, we got to get Wes out of there. He's getting up into his 70s. He's clearly not very good at doing this job. We got to get younger, leaner, meaner. Nah, we can't get rid of Wes. Wes was really good. He wasn't as good of a player, a pure player, as Elvin Hayes. Elvin Hayes, who was from Houston area, he was the best player on that championship team back in the late 70s, the 79 championship team. So,
Sammy Baugh should be in this conversation. This is obviously way before our times, he delivered championships. He played three different positions. He had an extraordinarily long career, as I recall with Sammy Baugh. It was like, I don't know, 18. I don't know, some number of years. It was a long, long career, right? And I think he revolutionized the passing game. I would think Sammy Baugh would be in consideration here.
They named him Slingin' Sammy Baugh because he dared to throw the football in an ancient bygone era when you were supposed to run it. The wing tee, the veer, the power eye. Throwing the football was considered charge insane. Insane.
Yeah. All right, Zabe, final question. Number one, tough question for Steve Zabin. You've been on the air for over 30 years. What is the one segment you'll never forget?
Clearly being on the air when the second plane hit the tower on 9/11. Mm. I was on with Bob and Brian in the morning on Laser or The Hog. And there was already a report, hey, there's been a plane crash at the World Trade Center, and it was already smoldering from the first one. There was no footage of it because it was like, what the hell just happened? And I'm kind of keeping one eye on it, and I'm doing the sports with them. And then the next plane hit, and the anchors were like, oh, my God. And you could tell it was not a small plane, and the segment wrapped up in a hurry after that. And the world was never quite the same after that. That's the most memorable. Was it the best or the most fun? I don't know. I would have to, on the flight out to Vegas next week, I'm going to bear down at 30,000 feet and think about some of these because I probably should have a loose top three of a lot of these categories. Best golf rounds, best segments. Although it sounds like, Church, you're prepping me to maybe die. And I don't really like the tone the DJ talks. Don't of say this, okay. You know?
Well,
do you know something that I don't know?
Maybe at 30,000 feet, maybe you get a little introspective about your body mass.
My BMI. That's an
opportunity to.
I mean, I'm working on it. Right?
BMI, right?
Working on it.
Here's what I'll tell you about this last one. Every time I ask an on-air person, the segment they'll always remember. It's never sports. It's never, the post game that I had after, this win or the predict that correct prediction I made. It's always something not sports, something more personal.
Yeah.
Significant.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you, my man. 10 tough questions for Steve Zabin.
And next week we can talk about Meta shutting down the entire metaverse, the VR thing that they had poured billions into. That was going to be Zuckerberg's big thing. Just said,
tough day for VR fans like me. This is a big loss, unfortunately.
I better get my headset back from you before it's no longer operational. Will you bring that down to Vegas? Can I reclaim it?
I will.
Are you
bring
done?
It down to Vegas.
Bring it down. I'm going to take it back home again. I'm reclaiming it.
All right. You got it.
All right, Charge. I'll see you next week,
thank
buddy.
You,
thank you. See
Talk
ya.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hey, Jose. Yeah, what? Listen to this. It's coming. You know what it is?
What?
It's a drum solo.
Okay, everyone. Like, this is me on the drums.
Oh, get out. It is not.
It
You're
is
not.
So.
Stop I learn.
That's it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. Looking forward to Zabe Vegas next week. Come on and watch some basketball. Tomorrow, the bracket racket officially begins. Have fun with it. Enjoy it. and try not to assault too many people with, hey, look how my teams are doing. They don't care. Download the Gargantu bracket from my Twitter feed. It's got everything you could ever want. Thank you to Alex Keppel for taking over for Brad Turner for putting that monster together for your enjoyment during March Madness. Have a great Thursday, and we will see you next time.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.